Gas prices in the U.S. have been declining for 34 straight days. The national average is the lowest it's been since May 15th at just under $4.49 a gallon. That's still significantly higher than it was a year ago, but the White House is hoping the decline could start lowering inflation as a result. Meanwhile, some economists are concerned that a slowing of the economy could lead to a recession, but other indicators of a recession, like unemployment and consumer spending, remain healthy. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are you seeing at the gas pumps in your area? Have you seen prices come down steadily? Are you worried about these still high prices of gas? How has it affected you? How much you drive? How much of a budget bite it has put on you? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thought on gas prices, your questions about the wider economy. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Menzie Chin is back with us, professor of public affairs and economics at the Robert M. La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Menzie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Pleasure to be back here again.
Let's start with gas prices and oil prices, I guess, part of the equation there. Not plummeting, certainly, but declining steadily since that peak last month. What do you see driving those prices back down a little bit?
Okay, so well, gasoline prices through the week ending about July 11th, down about 7% from their peak in late June. So what does that mean? Well, gasoline's about 3.8% of what's in the consumer price index basket. So you have a big change on something that's got a relatively small weight. It can still move around the overall inflation rate. So that's going to shave off about maybe a quarter percentage point on what was like 1.3% increase over the last month. So it's a substantial impact on the direction. And then the big question is whether the big driver of gasoline prices, which is oil prices, are going to continue to fall.
Something I always wonder about with gas prices and inflation, I don't know, maybe it's a stupid question, I don't know. Like, we pay more at the pump directly, but also, you know, diesel prices have been really high, and I imagine that drives up the cost of things that get carried around in trucks, food, furniture, you name it. Is there that kind of secondary effect on inflation when gas prices are up, that transportation cost?
Exactly. It's all over the place. That's an excellent point. You know, so the 3.8% is just the direct cost to consumer basket as measured by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And if you think about it, well, everything relies upon energy to a certain extent. So gasoline prices for just everybody's living costs, which then feed into wages, but more directly also, all the derivatives of oil that are used for both heating and for driving and logistics and transportation, they too will be pushed up when oil prices go up. And so when oil prices go down, you know, the reverse happens. And so those are other effects that aren't usually mentioned as primary importance, because you have to sort of figure out and trace out exactly how much does, you know, the price of something shipped by Amazon is going to be impacted, for instance, by you know, diesel costs.
Now, one funky thing about oil prices, of course, is they're really volatile. You know, early in the pandemic, one kind of oil was negative money in cost, in effect. Now it's gone up. Things like a Russian invasion of Ukraine can affect oil prices. Things in the Middle East, hurricanes knocking out refineries in the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah. It's hard to predict what's going to happen next, right?
Exactly. And if you think about all the complaints about how we mispredicted inflation, well, I think you have to take into account the fact, you know, several things. First, we came up from very low prices, negative in some sense for futures, you know, prices on what are called derivatives markets, but, you know, essentially negative prices, zero prices for oil at some point. Then you had the reopening of the economy. And then, you know, on top of that, you had some unexpected events, including, for instance, the Russian invasion. So when you talk about, well, why were the experts so wrong? Part of it, not all of it, but part of it was, you know, you make your predictions conditioned on, like, do you expect the Russians to invade further the Ukraine? Yes, no, hedge your bets, maybe 10% yes, 90% no. And as it turned out, we were wrong in that assessment. And that's a big part. If you look at the what's happening to inflation month by month, you can see that headline inflation, that is what includes energy and food costs, you know, they're at, you know, highs for years and years and years on a month-to-month basis. But if you strip out energy and food, we're actually down. That is, core inflation month-on-month is down relative to what it was, let's say, roughly a year ago. So you're exactly right. Energy prices are extremely volatile. That makes the overall inflation rate a little bit harder to predict, especially when you have events that are big and discrete and impact strongly oil supply. And then, of course, you're right. Refineries are sort of this intermediate link between oil prices and gasoline prices. Mm-hmm. If you have an outage, which is much more likely these days, in a situation having an impact because we've had declining refinery capacity, or at least it's not been growing quickly over the years, then you're much more susceptible to these additional shocks along the way, along the pipeline, you might say.
Talking to Menzie Chen, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, doing an economic checkup, gas prices, oil prices, inflation, risk of recession. You can call in with your thoughts, your experiences. How is inflation affecting you? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Denny is with us in Waupaca. Hi, Denny.
Hi. I think there's three things going on. COVID disrupted supply chains that are still not up to speed. President Trump put 1.8 trillion people's hands. President Biden put 1.9 trillion. And there's $2.5 trillion in corporate savings right now. So you've got a massive amount of money competing for fewer and fewer goods and services, certainly causing some inflation. But the other part of it's just flat gouging. There's a substantial amount of gouging going on in energy and other areas right now. That's my comment.
Denny, thanks. You gave us a half hour worth of material there. Menzie, let's start with his last point, the idea that there's price gouging going on. Denny says, especially in the oil and gas industry. Is that it, or is this just supply and demand?
Well, you know, it depends a lot on your definition of gouging. What's true is if you've got sort of a lot of demand and for something, and people are not very sensitive to the price changes to alter their use of that item, then the suppliers got all the leverage. And so to the extent that the suppliers have the leverage, yeah, that you could think of that as gouging. I mean, for economists, we would say that they're exploiting sort of the monopoly power. So, yes, the margins for energy producers are probably increasing a lot. Now, the thing is, that should explain sort of the short-term increase in prices. But you can't have gouging going on. The increase in gouging amount can increase forever so that it forever pushes up the rate of increase of prices. So I could say I'd be in full agreement that, you know, what some people might call gouging is raising the price level faster. But if you think about inflation, which is sort of this trend increase in prices over time, you know, it is in some sense, you know, energy prices and supply and demand. So I'm not saying gouging isn't part of the story about prices are so high. It can't explain the sort of continued acceleration of energy prices. And for that, I think you have to look at the collision of, you know, resurgent demand against supply constraints, partly because, you know, some supply has gone offline, but partly because the OPEC producers have been pretty disciplined about not increasing supply as much as they might have in previous instances.
And Denny also raised something that people talk about a fair amount, Menzie, the idea that, okay, we had so much COVID relief money pumped into the economy. Denny says under the Trump administration, under the Biden administration, that, you know, when the government puts that much money in people's hands and maybe there's limited supply, that in and of itself is going to be a factor in inflation. How big a factor do you see it?
Okay, well, in point of fact, I agree to a certain extent. In fact, I'd say that's more than $1.8 trillion in the previous administration. If you just sum up the many packages that were passed, a small one, then the CARES package, then another one at the end of President Trump's term. And then you had the package passed by the American Rescue Plan under the Biden administration. So that's a lot of stimulus. The latest study I saw was roughly, if I look at overall inflation, maybe half is due to supply issues, including, for instance, oil, maybe a third to demand, and maybe, you know, the rest is you couldn't distinguish exactly where it was coming from. So I think it's fair to say you could apportion a lot of blame to, you know, to excess of demand. Now, it's a little bit hard to say that that's the cause right now, because in point of fact, we had this big burst of spending, and now the level of spending is decreasing, so that you're actually kind of exerting a drag on the economy by shrinking the amount of spending. So I wouldn't say that the demand side is contributing a lot to the inflation we're seeing now. And once again, I come back, you know, the core inflation, you know, stripping out energy and food, that's coming down on a month-to-month basis. But the energy, the one that's the headline that we all pay attention to that includes energy, well, that's zipping around up and down a lot in recent months. And a lot of that is because of oil. We tend to, you know, you get different stories and different culprits looking, depending upon which of the price indices you're looking at.
Denny, thanks for the call. We're talking to UW-Madison economics professor Menzi Chin, looking at gas prices, inflation, and concerns over a possible recession. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. How are gas prices and inflation affecting your life? Are they changing your decisions about how, when, and where to spend money? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Menzi Chin, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, looking at inflation, gas prices, and the risk of a recession in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Menzi, before we go back to our callers, I want to give a listen to White House Chief Economist Jared Bernstein talking about the risk of a recession. This was on Monday.
Based on consumer spending, based on payroll employment, based on where the unemployment rate is, I think we can confidently say that these numbers that we're posting are very much inconsistent with a recessionary call given where we are right now. I think that is the most accurate way to assess the answer to that question.
So not so worried about the risk of a recession, he sounds there. What are you looking at, Menzi, when it comes to the possibility of a recession?
Well, I think there's two distinctions, or a single distinction to make about this probability of recession. The first one is the immediate, you know, right now and immediately in the near future. And there, you know, what data we have, I mean, most of the data we have refers to either June or May, indicates that as of June or May, we weren't likely to have been in a recession. Now, that's a little squishy because, you know, the official arbiter of the what's a recession is the National Bureau of Economic Research, which is a think tank. There's a particular committee that is charged with making that determination. And it usually does it months, if not years, after the fact. You know, what we can say is with the data we have now, it would seem to be very unlikely that we're in a recession now. And the key thing to look at is things like employment and personal income taking out transfers, and we're rising through June. So, you know, at least May through June. And so those indicators are indicating or suggesting that the economy is still growing. Now, I think what people are worried about, most economists, are that we have relatively high inflation, and the question is whether the Fed is going to step on the brakes so much that by raising interest rates, the Fed funds rate, so much so quickly that it topples the economy into a recession. And by the time you're in a recession, it's too late to sort of pull your foot off the brake. I think most people are thinking that if there's a recession, it'll be sometime in the middle to late part of next year. So we tend to look at various indicators that, you know, are forward looking, like interest rates and long term interest rates. And they seem to suggest that, you know, there's a high likelihood, you know, 50% or more, that in the latter half of 2023, we'll go into recession if the historical relationships hold.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I just have a comment. I think it's interesting that we talk about the concerns of the cost of energy, either for fuel, for moving cars or for food production. And yet, the other big issue in the news cycle is droughts in Western United States and Africa, heat wave in Europe and Great Britain. It's like we're concerned about the fuel on one hand, and then the global warming that's happening significantly because of fuel use on the other, but we never integrate the two.
Tom, thanks for the call. Well, gave me an easy opportunity to promo. We'll talk about extreme heat and climate change tomorrow on the show, Tom. But Menzie, I think sometimes it's easy to look at climate change as an externality. I think economists call it to the oil and fuel industry, but it does affect the economy too.
Yes. I mean, so I would say that the caller is exactly right. We know as an economist speaking about how we should address externalities, you know that their fossil fuel consumption or use has a benefit to the private user, but then all these costs of pollution and global climate change spill over and impinge upon everybody, not just our next door neighbor, but all over the world. And so the economist's solution is to internalize the externalities, that is, make people behave as if they took into account those costs, and that is to put a tax or to regulate somehow indirectly through cap and trade to make it such that we behave in a way that we take into account those costs. Now, those things go by the wayside in terms of people's interest when gasoline prices spike up. That's the unfortunate aspect of politics. But in principle, I would say you don't want to react crazily in the moment where you've got high prices. You should probably want to be on some sort of long-term path where you're having the price of fossil fuels reflect these costs. And that would mean less reliance upon fossil fuels at exactly these times that you might have these spikes. You might not ever be able to get rid of these spikes, but at least you wouldn't be so reliant upon those energy sources. And you wouldn't have this impulse to, let's say, give a tax holiday on gasoline at such times. So I don't know if that's an answer to the question, but surely there's a better way of addressing these two concerns than sort of reacting in a sort of unfocused manner.
Tom, thanks for that call. Mike joins us next in Madison. Mike, hello.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to just comment on something earlier. I agree that we need to allow the refineries to be built in this country. We have to have the EPA and regulatory agencies free up that ability in order for us to be able to lower our prices of fuel. Going back on what the previous caller just said, only about 5% of a barrel of oil is asphalt cement for our roads. So even if we're all driving electric vehicles, we're still going to have to find something to do with the other 95% of a barrel of oil in order to pave our roadways. And then the third thing is China's going nuclear. They've got 100 new nuclear plants planned in the next 25, 30 years. They're building their own sun. And if we don't start to free up the ability for nuclear power plant development in this country, our economy is going to be severely depressed because we won't be able to compete not only on a labor pricing formula, but also on the energy formula. They're going to have such cheap energy in comparison.
Mike, I got you. We don't have too much time left. Menzie, his first and third points there allow more refinery building, which can be a bottleneck, turning oil into gasoline, and more nuclear development. Two ways, Mike says, we can help cut energy costs.
Well, I mean, probably we want more refinery investment or capacity investment just to remove bottlenecks. But the overall question is whether you want to encourage more fossil fuel use. And I think the answer is, given the externalities which we're living through, even as we speak with record temperatures around the world, I think you have to say that you want to decrease consumption of fossil fuels. That's my judgment based upon values, but I think an economist would typically agree with that. Now, so the other issue about energy costs and so forth, well, maybe nuclear would be better. I think you have to look at the relative costs. And one of the things that people don't remark upon is that the cost of renewables is dropping over time, especially if you think about taking into account the externalities. Renewables, you know, not all of them are pollution-free, but they're mostly pollution-free. What's happening is that, you know, you have the cost of photovoltaics, getting solar power dropping. You have development of more wind power. In Texas, for instance, like a quarter of wind of total generation is wind power, if not more. And the storage technology is improving over time so that the costs are going down there. So I think there's a whole panoply of things besides just between going fossil, nuclear, and renewables. You know, what you'll want to do is to look at the relative cost of these things. In the United States, nuclear has been relatively expensive to develop for a variety of reasons in any case. So it's not just enough to say, well, we want more nuclear. You don't have the right private incentives necessarily to go to nuclear. And it's not clear that you really want to go all the way to nuclear as in any case, given costs.
Mike, thanks for that call. Menzie, big picture in our last half minute, what economic news are you watching for next?
Well, I think two observations. One is that while the short-term inflation rates are high and the short-term expectations are for high inflation rates, people, if I just ask ordinary people as well as economists, they view the inflation rate that we'll see in the next year as substantially lower, something closer to 3% over a 12-month basis. So in that sense, people don't expect inflation to be at the rates that they are now. And then looking even further out, expectations of inflation are much closer to 2 to 3%, so what we would call anchored. So the fear of getting the runaway inflation that we got in the 70s, remember, we still haven't hit the inflation rate that we got in 1980, for instance, that fear is somewhat mitigated. So I have hope there. The other thing is, I'd say don't overreact. I think that's a big question. Whether the Fed raises interest rates too much, and that who knows ahead of time, that's the thing that you might worry about toppling us and the rest of the world economy into recession.
Menzie, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Menzie Chin from UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, looking at the latest economic news, including gas prices and inflation.